I've seen her fight.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, I covered one of her fights.
Oh, we're live.
Oh, okay.
Making sure music is not working, so screw it.
This is Ramble Around with Rich Bergeron. Yo, this is Tornado, Sunny Eastel.
And we're coming at you live with another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. And we have a special guest, female boxer, Melissa St. Ville, I think it's pronounced.
Yeah, I covered her. I covered her in her pro debut in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
Oh, cool. She's coming on at 8:30 Eastern. And she's also kind of wrapped up in a little bit of controversy with the Mayweather family. She's the one that Roger Mayweather allegedly assaulted. So.
Oh, yeah, that idiot.
I doubt she'll want to talk about that, but just...
Okay, I mean, if she wants to blow up Mayweather, I'll be happy to help her.
I think she hit him with a lamp, or either before
sure.
or after. She's come out and I think said that, he basically attacked her, and obviously he's being prosecuted for it. I don't know what the latest is in the case, but... she had a history with him, I guess, so apparently that stirred up some issues between them. I know there was something to do with housing, that Roger was the landlord or something of the place she was staying in, at here in Vegas, but now she's back in New York, where she grew up. And it was actually, we got to give a shout out to the boxing empress, Keisha. This up with this interview. Keisha Morrissey, always a good guest, and she's trying to hook us up with Monty Barrett as well.
Next. Oh, Monty can sound Barrett. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. He's got quite the history of boxing big names over the last few years. He's kind of like, the big... test for a lot of these guys coming up in the heavyweight division. So we got a ton of other interesting stories to cover. Amir Khan has seemingly flipped the switch on the Floyd Mayweather situation with Manny Pacquiao. And Floyd Sr. came out recently and said that Amir Khan looks like he's on performance-enhancing drugs.
Nice.
So Amir Khan came back and said, well, it seemed to me that Floyd Jr. was a little bit big for his fight against Oscar De La Hoya. So maybe he's on performance-enhancing drugs. So Amir Khan is not playing nicely there with his comebacks. But he actually has a fight this weekend against Zab Judah right here in Vegas, which I didn't get press credentials to.
I know some people are. I mean, that fight's honestly toss-up. Because what you got here, to make it interesting, is you got two exceptionally fast fighters with big power and weak chins.
Right.
That's a fight that spells anything can happen. I mean, there are times you see like guys just come out of there and they got quick hands, and that's all combinations. But at the same time, they're vulnerable to any kind of counterpunch, and neither of them are great defensively. Neither of them are. They both got quick hands, so they can use land punches. We got a conventional fighter. We got a southpaw. So he's going to try to, you know, be firing straight rights or straight lefts. Judah likes to jump in and out. Khan's a little bit more of a traditional type boxer, where Judah's a little bit flashier and a little bit more unorthodox. But here's the thing, is like anybody's chin can give out on them in any second. That is a fight that can go down to 2 minutes and like 15 seconds to go in the last round and somebody getting knocked out.
Right. Yeah, it should be pretty cool either way. I think it's.
And you got a youth versus experience too. I mean, Khan has really been fighting well lately, but I mean, he took a hell of a beating in that fight with Marcus Madonna when he had Madonna down and hurt pretty bad in the first, and Madonna came back and had him hurt multiple times in that fight through the last few rounds. And I thought in the last round, I mean, I don't know how Khan stayed on his feet. I mean, he showed a lot of heart. Don't get me wrong, but he took a hell of a lot of punishment. Judah is much faster than Madonna. I don't think he hits pound for pound as hard, but he's much faster. Speaking of fantastic fights, did you happen to catch that fight on ESPN Friday Night Fights last week?
No, I didn't get a chance to see it. But,
did you hear about it?
Which one was this?
The Delvin Rodriguez, Powell Wolak fight?
Oh, yeah, actually, I did read a big article about that.
You know what? The fight was so good, ESPN2 was going to re-air it. I don't know exactly when. It was a fight where Rodriguez, the taller guy, was the underdog. Wolak is kind of like a poor man's Ricky Hatton. He comes straight in, he gets square up, and he just tries to maul you and beat you with pressure. And a lot of guys Hatton was able to beat like that, you know. But then when he got to the upper class, like the Floyd Mayweather and the Manny Pacquiao, you know, they were just able to time him and use superior speed. So Yuri Foreman in his last fight, you know, he's working his way up, puts his head right in your chest, squares up, which is, for me, a no-no in boxing, but he's had success by just grinding these guys down. And Rodriguez, you know, was losing early, but was laying the blame some counters, and Wolak was showing some abrasion and a small cut around his right eye. And all of a sudden, I think it was like the seventh round, Rodriguez lands an innocent-looking left hook, caught him right on the eye with it. Within 10 seconds, there was a visible knot. By the end of the round, his eye was completely closed, and it looked like somebody put almost a softball on his orbital socket.
Yeah,
it was sticking out. I mean, imagine that, Ricky. You're looking at the person like, imagine you're looking at guys and from the back point of them, you're looking at the back of their head. You wouldn't see a swollen eye. This one was so bad, it was actually sticking out the side like a softball was on the side of his face.
Yeah,
the doctor was looking at him every round. I mean, the doctor was contemplating stopping it every round, but he let him go. Wolak, you know, was able to prove that he could see. They kept fighting. All Rodriguez was doing was just aiming for that eye, hitting him in that eye. Great strategy. And, you know, it went to final 10 rounds, and I think Teddy Atlas had it a one-point win, and I forget who he gave it to. But I turned to my dad, we watched it together, and I said, I hope this fight's a draw. Because neither guy deserved to lose. They both fought their asses off, and it was that close and that competitive. And one judge gave it to Rodriguez, I think, 97-93, and then the other two judges had it 95-95, so it ended up being a draw. And hopefully they'll tangle again.
Yeah, it's definitely a fight that generated a lot of publicity now after the fact. A lot of people were talking about it, and I read a couple articles about it, actually, that were talking about how, you know, it was one of those examples of bad judging. I don't know if it should have been a draw, but, you know, usually when people see a guy's eye swollen up like that, they pretty much, even if they haven't seen the fight, they think the guy lost.
Right, yeah, very true.
So that kind of might have had a little bit of a an effect on people's judgments after the fact of the actual judging of the fight, but who knows what actually went into their minds when they decided to have two guys enter in the decision for a draw. So we don't know but we also had a fight last weekend between Antonio Tarver and Danny Green in
big upset.
Tarver won.
Not from what I was talking about, it obviously was an televised mistake. Not only did Tarver win, Tarver dominated. And they said he had him down a couple of times early in the fight. He had him hurt. And then he finally just, you know, broke him down. And, you know, he stopped him in around the ninth round. But it wasn't like one of those fights where he was losing or whatever and he came back and went. No, from all the reports I read, he pretty much kicked the living patootie out of him the whole fight.
Right. Tarver actually said Green hurt him a couple of times. But he went on and got the finish and won the fight. And he now has another title. He's the IBO Cruiserweight Boxing Champion, World Champion. And there was a ninth round TKO that finished the fight. Wednesday, I said last weekend, but it was a Wednesday, last night. There's another story about boxing here. HBO had the situation come up recently where big name in boxing over there, Ross Greenberg, resigned. And I know that there's been some history there with some disagreements. Supposedly, Greenberg was the one that killed the HBO deal with UFC. So it kind of makes it interesting because now we have a situation where the UFC is going to be getting rid of or renewing their deal with Spike pretty soon here. I think they have to come up with some kind of a decision within the next month or so here. So it'll be interesting to see if Greenberg was the one that made it impossible for the UFC to negotiate with HBO and if they decide to go back to the table. But they're still going to be looking for a partner to do regular cable TV shows with. And they've talked actually about buying their own station to do something with it. But I don't know exactly what's going to happen there. But it's definitely an interesting development. There's differing opinions on what brought about the resignation. Greenberg was president of HBO Sports in general, so it didn't just have to do with boxing. He's the one that started the HBO Boxing After Dark series, and his biggest moment in boxing came when they televised Floyd Mayweather Jr. versus Oscar De La Hoya back in 2007, and that set a record for buys with 2.4 million buys. And pretty much launched Mayweather into superstardom there. And Greenberg recently signed a deal with Mayweather and Golden Boy Promotions to televise his September 17th fight against WBC welterweight champion Victor Ortiz from the MGM on HBO pay-per-view. But one of the big bones of contention that people speculate is the reason why he left was because Manny Pacquiao, I guess, decided not to go with the HBO when HBO lost the Pacquiao versus Shane Mosley fight to Showtime back in May. And that was a really tough loss for the network and for Greenberg. So he's out. I don't know who's going to be their replacement, but hopefully, or his replacement, but hopefully it's somebody who's you know, looking to take the whole station into a different direction or a better direction, I guess. I don't know. And keep building on what they've started there. We'll see. Other than that, we get a pretty interesting story in Florida regarding not human boxing, but kangaroo boxing. And it's been in a couple of the Google links that I get every day. So I decided to check it out. And everybody's getting into the story. Of course, PETA, the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, are coming in saying that the fights are illegal because every boxing match in Florida must be licensed. You know, I'm not too sure what the rules are on exhibitions. I don't think it's a competitive match when you got a kangaroo who's basically just clowning around for the audience.
I mean, seriously. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I am not a big fan of the PETA organization. I think a lot of them are idiots, to be totally honest. And, I mean, along the other lines, I mean, I'm just going to give you an example. Maybe 15, 20 miles from where I live now, my area in Pennsylvania outside of Philadelphia, there's some areas in Pennsylvania that are heavily populated with deer, you know, white-tailed deer. I have a farm next to my house. There are some times that I will see, you know, 15 or 20 in my yard coming home at night sometimes. I mean, there's a lot of them. But about 20 miles away, there's a park there, and Valley Forge Park, and there is, you know, a heavy deer population. So maybe we're going to bring in snipers and sharpshooters to, you know, thin out the population at night, you know, and they were going to use the venison to feed the homeless. You know, they're going to, you know, donate them to the food banks. So the PETA people were up in arms about it, saying, oh, you can't do that. That's unethical. That's torturous. Why don't you, to thin out the population, enhance the coyote population, because that's natural. Well, first of all, what is more, you know, inhumane? Getting a bullet in the head and dying instantly and having the meat, you know, donated to people that are needy and, you know, are starving, or getting mauled and torn apart alive and eaten by a pack of coyotes.
And then you just create another problem, because coyotes aren't the best animal to have an infestation of or a
population. Exactly. What are they going to do? What are they going to do? You know, they're not going to say, well, I'm only supposed to eat the deer. They see a dog, they see a cat, they see a young child. Yeah, and then people are going to be all, oh, they ate the kid or whatever. Here's a perfect example. My dad knew a couple that for years they were anti-hunting. I mean, they were, you know, anti-hunting. They thought it was the worst thing in the world. Until their daughter was in a car accident, a one-vehicle accident where she hit a deer, veered off, rolled the car, and died from her injuries. Now they're very pro-hunting, and they're very pro having sharpshooters come in and thin out the population. So whatever PETA says, I wipe my ass with it, to be totally honest. I hope there's some PETA people listening tonight, and I wipe my ass with you, too.
My cousin's girlfriend wrecked like three of his cars, two brand new ones and one of the old ones that he had. And it was the first one that was the rollover. It was like she said that she was going around the corner and she saw a deer. And the car literally was like off the side of the road in a ditch. And she walked away without a scratch. And it was like flipped over completely, like she barrel rolled in the air. So she was very lucky to be alive. But she went to wreck two more cars. Kind of interesting. But this kangaroo story, it kind of makes me laugh because, number one, kangaroos are known as, sort of boxing figures because of Australia. I think it's the Olympic team. There's a bunch of different sports teams that use the kangaroo logo with the boxing gloves on for Australia. So, obviously, the place where the damn animal is from, they don't frown upon putting boxing gloves on, at least the picture of a kangaroo. And I thought it was kind of interesting watching the video because it doesn't really box as much as it's trying to Muay Thai on the guy. It seems to go for the hugging movement rather than the the actual throwing punches. And he seems like he's having a good time. It doesn't seem like they're really hurting him much. The only thing I saw in the article about it was that the living conditions have been known to be pretty shoddy for these animals in the circus. And I guess the kangaroo started chewing on his arm at one point in one of the exhibitions. But, hey, maybe he's just itchy, you know? Because humans don't chew on their arms. Doesn't mean animals shouldn't, you know? That's just part of what they do, you know? But anyway, that's enough about animals. We also had an interesting show, or an interesting story about combat sports and brain damage. There's apparently going to be a brand new study outlining how both sports affect brain injury, brain damage. And like we talked about before times on the show, it seems like there's two different types of injuries related to each sport. Respectively, you have in MMA, you have concussions more often than not, and in boxing, it seems to be pugilistic dementia type of injuries with long-term effects. But there's also still not enough information out there to determine whether MMA could be just as bad over the course of a fighter's career. And basically, the researchers already have 20 participants. They're looking to get more than 650 boxers and mixed martial arts fighters to volunteer for this project. And a billionaire named Kirk Kerkorian and his Lindsay Foundation is funding the study with a grant of more than $400,000. And they're going to have these participants undergo four annual MRI brain scans along with cognitive and speech tests and physical exams to monitor how brain activity can be changed by head trauma in the ring or cage. The person coordinating the study, Cleveland Clinic's Maureen Peckman, said, "This study will help us better understand what happens in a fighter's brain in the course of a career. We need evidence-based protocols for people to make objective rather than subjective decisions about when someone can participate." And that's also the Nevada State Athletic Commission is also participating. And surprisingly, the UFC has already signed on and is actually encouraging the fighters to participate in the study, which kind of surprises me because... you know, you'd think the UFC would want nothing to do with finding out exactly how bad injuries could be because it might mean they'd have to pay more in the long run for the hazardous conditions their fighters are entrenched in there. But, hey, you know, maybe there is a good side to the UFC after all. Another mixed martial arts news. We have a situation brewing with strikes and a guy named Alistair Overeem, who has actually made a lot of waves lately, like Nick Diaz, without the same results that Nick Diaz got, of course. But Alistair Overeem is going around saying that he wants to go into boxing, professional boxing. And he's already doing... sort of a good impersonation of David Haye because he says he has a toe injury that's preventing him from starting his training camp to fight Bigfoot, Antonio Bigfoot Silva in the Strikeforce Grand Prix heavyweight tournament that they're holding. They wanted him to fight in September and he said no, so they pulled him out of the whole tournament and they replaced him with Daniel Cormier, who's a 12-0 wrestler gone into MMA. Well, he's 12-0 as an MMA fighter, but he was a wrestler beforehand. Big Olympic wrestler. With great success in his past. But this is a big step up for him. And it sort of brings an interesting perspective because Overeem actually has had some K-1 kickboxing experience. And he's a lot bigger than David Haye. Doesn't have, of course, the kind of reach that the Klitschkos have, but he could definitely give them a run for their money, I think. And it would definitely be interesting to see what would happen. if Overeem get into boxing. I would like to see it for sure. But it's also one of those situations where he's been very outspoken about his feelings toward the UFC management style. And he actually mentioned at one point he doesn't like being threatened, because apparently they kind of threatened him with throwing him out of the organization if he didn't agree with what they wanted to do. So it's been pretty interesting. So we'll see what happens. I don't know what he's going to do. TV landscape for the UFC is about to change, like we talked about a little bit earlier. They're still negotiating with Spike TV. HBO, NBC Universal is another competitor that's recently cropped up. That includes NBC, Telemundo, Versus, and USA. So you could potentially see the UFC on any of those channels if they come to an agreement there. Deal with Disney is also on the table. That would provide outlets such as ABC, ESPN, and ESPN Deportes. And because the UFC has added so many more fighters to its roster, they're trying to get more airtime on TV for these guys, and also expand their audience to people who can't afford the pay-per-views. So we'll see what happens there. Timothy Bradley is getting sued. Have you heard this?
Well, isn't it by his own promoter?
It's so weird because, you know, the promoter, not only the promoter, but I think his management, too, is, like, suing him to keep him under their control. Like, they're basically trying to recoup some money for the refused fight. Basically, Bradley refused to fight Amir Khan for some reason. And now they're saying that not only do they want reward for a fight that never happened because he backed out, but they're also basically using the courts to try to convince him to stay with them. I don't see how they have any right to prevent him exploring his options when his contract runs out. But they're obviously thinking otherwise. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Definitely keep an eye on that situation. And in celebrity boxing, we have an interesting development with the Jose Canseco situation there.
I was reading about that today. I was laughing. I'm like, I don't know who is Steve here, Jose or the promoter.
Yeah, Damon Feldman. He's got a sort of a history of shenanigans there, and he actually at one point there was a story about him trying to kill himself. And
I never heard that.
Yeah, there was some difficulty there with him getting criminally charged for holding unauthorized boxing matches, and he ended up almost killing himself over that and some other family issues, I guess. But he apparently beat out Jose Canseco because Jose decided he's just going to not show up. Maybe he's trying to send a message that not only can't he afford to pay the damages, but he can't even afford to travel to the hearing. I don't know what his excuse is, but the hearing the other day, so now he is obligated to pay. On the fence, and you don't have a like to.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you a funny story regarding. I've known Damon for about 10 or 12 years, deals with all worked out, but, you know, it's obviously the celebrity box. I'll bring more entertainment value over, you know. Promotion with it all sports entertainment now. So Damon was putting together a fight card, and this was going to be a complete boxing card. And on the card, he had his main event fighter was a guy that he was really trying to push. What's this guy's name? Big John Poor, who was about 6'4", 221 pounds, former tough man fighter, because Damon used to do put together a lot of those tough man competitions. So Big John Poor was a former tough man, and Damon at the time was really pushing him. And John was, I'll say, maybe 15-0, like with 14 or 15 knockouts. And also on the card, they had a guy that I became friends with, and I haven't really talked to since. And his claim to fame was he won the Rocky Balboa. He fought like Rocky Balboa. And he was fighting another guy that I knew. So I met this kid. I actually did the scouting on his opponent for him. And I told him what to do. Also on the card, we had Butterbean in an exhibition. Now, you remember when we interviewed Butterbean, you know, a few months ago, and I said, yeah, that one card in Philly, and you had a little bit of an incident afterwards. And he goes, yeah, that guy was an idiot. This was stemming from the whole thing. They put Butterbean in there with the guy was another former tough man. The guy was a former police officer. Had about maybe 7 or 8 inches in height on Butterbean, and all he did was just stay on the outside and jab. Butterbean at the time was pushing close to 400, so he really wasn't the most mobile guy in the world. So this guy, Jamie Cowell, just stayed on the outside and jabbed the whole time, and Butterbean was getting pissed off. So now you had the Butterbean thing turned into a spectacle. The kid that won the Rocky Balboa lookalike contest gets knocked out in like 41 seconds. And now you have this main event, this guy that's undefeated, 15-0 or whatever it was at the time, goes in there against a guy that was like, you know, pretty much like not a has-been, but like a trail horse type fighter, a 500 or so record, loses to most of the good guys, but he gives some rounds. And John Poor is expected to, you know, hammer this guy. Well, basically, from the first round to the fifth round, this guy, Robert Hawkins, kicks the living crap out of John Poor, and they stop it after five rounds. And Damon was so pissed off that his card went to complete shit that he tried to sue, or not sue, but he tried to have Robert Hawkins tested for steroids. Robert Hawkins is a guy that, you know, he had a gut hanging over. You know, he wasn't a big, muscular guy. He just happened to be a trained fighter, and he, you know, beat John Poor. John Poor's been knocked out like 4 or 5 times since. But Damon was pissed off because all of his money tickets for that night went to hell, and Butterbean was threatening to sue him. It was just a mess. It was a horrible, ugly boxing card. Now, on the other side, Jose Canseco, I mean, his fight when he fought that tough man thing with Vi Tikahama, I knew that was going to be a joke because Vi, you know, I mean, I remember when he played for the Eagles, even though he was about, you know, 50 pounds lighter and about, you know, 7 or 8 inches shorter than Jose Canseco, Vi was a Golden Glove boxer. They used to always talk with him when he played for the Eagles. Even he'd return a punt for a touchdown, and he would go punch the goalposts. And that's the thing I said. I remember people asked me, they're like, if I was going to bet on this fight, who would I pick? I'm like, you're going to pick Vi Tikahama by knockout. Why? He's so much smaller. I'm like, yeah, size doesn't mean nothing when it's, you know, when there's quality.
Right.
You know, and that thing, Vi has a lot of quality. Jose doesn't. He can be a big, strong lug. He's going to get torn up, and Vi tore him up. And then I remember he tried to do, I forget if it was K-1 or some type of, you know, mixed martial art type of fighting. And basically, the Japanese guy got him on the ground, punched him like 2 or 3 times, like he had him on the side, and he clubbed him like 3 times, and there's Jose tapping out. I'm like, are you kidding me? Most fighters would rather be unconscious than, you know, tap out like that because they got love tapped a few times.
All right. Well, I think we just missed Melissa St. Deal. She was trying to call in, but
sorry, she told me shut up.
But getting back to Feldman, he got fined, or he actually collected, or he's going to collect if he's lucky, $6,500 plus legal fees. So it's what you get for trusting Jose Canseco, I guess, and getting his brother instead. We're going to try to hopefully get Melissa on here. She just tried to call in a couple times. Tried to connect. That's hard to do.
Yeah, it is. I got a big mouth.
But I just got a, I guess I just got an email from Keisha, so she's definitely by her computer, her BlackBerry or whatever she's using. So we'll get the word out to her to tell Melissa to call back in.
We don't have a number to call Melissa?
Well, they did have a number flash up on the screen, but I don't have any way to cut and paste that into the...
They're putting Melissa back into her children?
What?
Well, if she dialed in, wouldn't that link her right in with us?
No, because you have to turn on the microphone.
Oh.
She called into the actual interface for the show on Blog Talk Radio. Instead of actually calling into my phone here. No, she does, I think, have that number. Let's see what happens. My computer's deciding to go. It's slow, of course, now. Let's see, there's another interesting boxing story we could talk about while we're waiting. Margarito and Cotto, part two. Has been announced December 3rd. What do you think about that one?
Well, I mean, it seems for Cotto to get his revenge for one. But on the other hand, it's like, how much do we keep, you know, putting money in Margarito's pocket? There are two things. One, being a, you know, a caught cheater, and two, for being a washed up fighter. I mean, two of his last three fights, he got the living crap kicked out of him. And the fight in between that, he fought a guy and he gave a mediocre performance. You know, definitely was not eye-opening. So that's the kind of thing right there. It's like, how much does he really have left? He's got a good chin. I'll give him that. But the damage he took in that Pacquiao fight, you know, his face, I mean, broken orbital socket. I mean, he was beaten uglier than a gargoyle. And, but, you know, maybe that's karma, you know? And you know Cotto wants this fight. Cotto wants that revenge. Now, if you're going to look at it, you know, one of two ways, could Margarito be that much less devastating without the quote-unquote doctored hand wraps? Or could it be a thing where styles make fights? It could be a thing where Margarito, even as, shop-worn as he is, might always have the style to... you know, hurt or beat Cotto, because Cotto is a pressure fighter with some boxing skills, but he's a guy that's always going to try to stand in front of Margarito, and maybe the pressure will wear him down, just like happened in the first time. Or it could be a thing where now that, you know, Margarito doesn't have that extra advantage, Cotto could, you know, box him and win a decision. I don't... if there's another knockout, it would be Margarito knocking Cotto out. I still don't see Cotto stopping Margarito. His style, Cotto's a hard puncher, I'll give you that, but his style is not the type of style that would knock Margarito out. Margarito would be more knocked out from a guy like Shane Mosley or Manny Pacquiao, who came very close to scoring a stoppage back in November.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely going to be one of those situations where, of course, everybody's going to be talking about the hand wrap issue, and... you know, whether Margarito was employing that same tactic of calcifying the wraps.
Miguel Cotto wins this fight, it doesn't matter if, you know, Margarito, say this fight happened in 60 years from now, and they reach about 90 years old, and Cotto wins, people are always going to say, Margarito won that first fight because of the wraps. Margarito has to win this fight legitimately, or he's never, ever going to be able to live that down. They fight again, and just say Cotto wins, you know, he he beats them on a clear decision, or he stops them late, or whatever. You know, if Cotto out there knocked him out in the first round, it wouldn't matter as much if he caught him early. And Cotto was catching him early the last time. Dawson Draft will never have a chance. But if the fight ends any type of distance, and Cotto wins either by stopping the decision, then Margarito will never, ever win that rap controversy round. Ever. If his first win over Cotto gets completely disregarded.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing though is there's so much time that's passed. The one thing if there was an immediate rematch because they discovered that in that fight, but so much time has passed. I don't think it's really any proof one way or the other whether he is just reps or not in that fight.
I'm not saying it's 100% proof or not, but in the eyes of the public, perception is reality, and. You know, what's going to happen then is, if Margarita does not win that fight, and especially if it goes a number of rounds, it goes a distance, and Cotto wins, people are always going to say he beat Cotto the first time because of the wraps.
Right. Well, December 3rd, we're going to have a lot of questions answered, and it's going to be at Madison Square Garden, so sort of neutral round for both guys. And it's definitely going to be a clash of titans there. I think Margarito's best days are behind him, and Cotto's had a couple tough losses in his last few fights as well. So both guys are definitely in need of a little bit of a boost going into this one. And hopefully it all works out. And we finally figure out who is the better fighter without any hint or air of any cheating whatsoever. It's one of the big fights on the horizon. We'll be watching and waiting for. Well, we're still waiting for Melissa to call back. I just finally got the message out to Keisha. What happens there? We haven't had mixed martial arts to talk about for a while as far as actual shows, but that's going to change here in early August. We have UFC 133 coming up. We'll run down that fight when we get closer to a card. But there's been some interesting commentary going back and forth between some of these fighters, and I guess Rampage has now got a little bit of a beef with Randy Couture. Of all people to pick a verbal fight with, I guess. Randy Couture seems to be one that is not going to generate any controversy in sniping back at him. He's not that type of guy, but Rampage basically said, F you to Couture, because he decided to make his pick public for the UFC fight between Rampage Jackson and Matt Hamill that Jackson just basically dominated. And Couture went out on a limb and picked Matt Hamill to win that fight. And apparently Rampage didn't like that at all, especially considering that he used to wear Randy Couture's gear all the time. The Extreme Couture line was always a big fan of his supporter, but he kind of expected, I guess, a quid pro quo for that he didn't get. So he's been having some Twitter temper tantrums over this situation.
Twitter temper tantrums are cool.
Oh, here we go. Melissa, can you hear us? Hello. Melissa.
They're looking for Melissa now.
Hello.
What's going on?
Can you hear us? I think they're going to get her.
Okay, well, keep doing what you're doing. Whoever wants to talk to you should start talking.
So Rampage Jackson, and Randy Couture probably aren't on good speaking terms, but who knows? I doubt Randy's going to come back from retirement to fight him. So it's probably not going to happen. His next fight's going to be against John Jones. That's enough of a fight for him to be thinking about rather than going off course. Back with Randy. I'm trying to connect with Melissa St. Beale here.
Yeah, they're trying to get online now. Right now, yeah, they're calling her now.
Is Melissa there? Hello? Can you guys hear us?
Heard something.
She's talking. She can be here.
I know she's messing up the show.
Hello?
Melissa? They steady trying to get her, but she ain't picking up.
Can you guys hear us? Hello? Caller, can you hear us?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the show. Can you hear us?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, I'm holding on for Melissa St. Beale.
Yes, she's there.
Hello.
There she is.
There she is. How's it going, Melissa? Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Pick up, Keisha.
So, Melissa,
hello.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron on here from Fight News Unlimited. How's it going?
Good.
And we also have Tony the Tornado on the line with us.
What's up, Melissa?
Hi.
Melissa, I got a question for you. When Rich mentioned you were going to be on our show tonight, I recognized your name immediately. And then I realized why. Back in 2007, you fought in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania at a high school gym. You fought a girl by the name of Olivia Fonseca, fought to a draw.
Yes.
I covered that fight. I actually pulled up my article that I wrote for that fight, and if you, I'd like to read, you know, what I wrote, that your pro debut. Okay. While the night may have belonged to Yorgi, the fight of the night belonged to two female gladiators making their professional debuts as Philadelphia's Olivia the Great Fonseca and New York's Melissa St. Beale engaged in a thrilling slugfest. St. Beale neutralized the six-inch height advantage of Fonseca, attacking her early and forcing the fight to be waged at close quarters. St. Beale scored cleanly in the first round, coming over the top of Fonseca's low guard with hooks and overhand rights. Fonseca was finally able to establish her offense in the second round, timing St. Beale's rushes with uppercuts. The torrid pace was clearly draining both combatants going into the third stanza, where Fonseca was able to flurry and score the cleaner punches. Going into the fourth stanza with the outcome hanging in the balance, both women took turns firing their best punches. The result was a draw, as all three judges scored about 38-38.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was there. I was in Phoenixville, which is about maybe 20 minutes from where I live. And the guy that fought the main event, Harry Yorgi, is a good friend of mine, so I had gone down to that fight. And Rich and I have a deal whenever I go to any live fight cards. I don't sit up with the press because the press, they have to work. And I don't want to work during my time off. So I just tell the whoever the promoter is, and I know most of them, you know, from being in sport for so many years. I say, listen, I said, I'm coming to cover this for Fight News Unlimited. I will pay for my ticket, and I will sit, you know, just put me in the front row or put me in the bleachers somewhere close, and let me bring a camera. That's all I want, is to bring my camera so I can take some photos. And most promoters usually accommodate me, and then I send Rich a report, and he puts it on the website.
Okay.
Now, what got you into fighting in the first place?
I always liked fighting as a little kid. So,
right.
I guess it was just always in me. Ever since I was little, I was just like play fighting, slap boxing, wrestling. So I always liked it.
Mm-hmm. And I also noticed that you were a model for the Boxio Girl series.
No, actually, I never modeled, but, I had a friend that, you know, they own a box sale thing, and they draw, like, cartoon things, so they just asked me if they could draw a cartoon figure of me and make shirts and stuff, and I just said, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, actually, I know the people behind that whole series. They had me interview the artist way back when I first started internet business here, so it's kind of an interesting tie-in that they did a series on you. Definitely pretty cool. Now, I think I have a caller who wants to ask you a question. Hello, caller? Caller, can you hear us?
Hello?
Yes, hello?
Hello.
Hi,
did you want to ask a question? How's it going? Did you want to ask Melissa a question?
Yes, I'd like to know what's next for her.
I don't know if you heard him, but he said he'd like to know what's next for you.
Oh, I guess, you know, I have a fight October 1st, so I'm getting ready for that. And I'm going to just take it, you know, one day at a time and just prepare for October 1st and whatever comes next.
All right. Now, where are you from, caller?
I'm calling out of New Jersey.
New Jersey, all right. Well, thanks a lot. Did you have any other questions?
Yes, what's your best punch, Melissa?
My
best
left
punch,
hook.
Left hook.
One of them.
And hook. All right.
Yeah, I remember in that fight in Phoenixville a couple of years ago, she hit Olivia Fonseca with some very good left hooks and some overhand rights over the top. Olivia, who I know from Philadelphia, and I've seen her fight about 5 or 6 times, is 5'10". You know, she had a distinct height advantage over Melissa, and Melissa was able to come over the top and land some very good, you know, hooks and overhand rights. I was like, I always have sympathy for the short fighters in the ring because I've always been a guy giving up height myself my whole career. So watching that, I was like, all right, man, that was pretty good. And the fight was entertaining. It was the best fight of the night by far. And even I had brought some friends of mine to that one. Even my mother went to that fight card. And even she was talking about it afterwards, like, wow, those two girls, they were going at it. That was the best fight of the night.
Now, caller, what's your name?
My name is Hassan.
What is it?
My name is Hassan.
Hassan?
Yes, I just happened to be listening in because I had heard your show was going to be on and someone called me your number. But being in boxing myself and seeing the women's boxing now coming to life, I was just curious what Lissa was going to do next.
All right. Well, we definitely thank you for calling in and appreciate your participation. Anytime we have the show on and we accept callers, you're welcome to call in and chat with us. So thanks a lot.
All right.
Thank you, Tom.
Have a good one. So you get quite the
homework.
It's like the first time in forever we've had a guest. So, Melissa, what's your ultimate goal with boxing?
My goal is, you know, try to open some more doors up for the females and, you know, hopefully, you know, try to, you know, get an opportunity to promote shows for the females, get them on more cards on pay-per-view, ESPN, HBO, because the girls, we train hard, just as hard as the guys, and I think we deserve a chance, you know, give us a shot, and, you know, that's what I want to try to do. So that's my goal. And winning one championship.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see the progression of women in both combat sports, really. I know that Christy Martin made a lot of waves when she was the first female to appear on HBO boxing.
She Mike Tyson on the card, and that really propelled female boxing to another level. I know that was, you know, while I was in college, you know, and a year or so after that, I had a professor. I was a communications major, so I used to, you know, do a lot of writing like I do now, and advertising, public relations. And I had a professor that was, she was a female professor, and she was very anti sports and things like that. So I had a tough time in her class, being a very sports related guy. You know, I used to write articles on the boxing team at Lock Haven University. While I was on the boxing team, I used to have to interview myself. So what I did was, my senior year in one of her classes, I did a chronicle of the rise of female boxing, how it has become popular at the time in the last 2 years, from 1996 to 1998 when I graduated. And actually, that got me in her class. We're good.
You're breaking up, Tony. What's going on? Tony, what happened?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can hear you.
Okay, I was just saying, talking about female boxing, Christy Martin, when she had that breakthrough in 1996, I had a professor at the time in my journalism major that her and I never saw eye to eye, and she was very anti-sports, and I used to do a lot of sports writing, especially boxing. And, you know, she just was anti-sports, and, you know, it always kind of hurt me when I was doing it in my classes. But my senior year, I wrote an article chronicling the rise of female boxing over the previous 2 years, and it actually got me an A in that class. First time I ever got an A in any of her classes.
Yeah. Now, Melissa, who are you fighting next year? You said you had a fight in October?
I don't know who the person is yet.
Oh, all right. And who's been your toughest opponent so far?
My toughest opponent... I would say... actually, it was an exhibition I did in Peru with Olivia Gorilla. She's a Canadian fighter. Even though it was an exhibition... in Peru, she was a tough girl.
All right. And I know you've been boxing for a long time. You've been in the business, but you only got 5 fights. So have you been doing a lot of those exhibitions?
I did only a few, probably 2. I did one with Sydney Serrano, Amanda Serrano, and Olivia Gorilla.
All right. So what have you been doing other than boxing?
I was in school, I was running track. So I was on a track team. I was running in nationals. I'm a 2-time All-American champ. So I was running track in college.
Awesome. That's a pretty good background to have as a boxer. You're not afraid of road work, huh?
Yeah. So the running comes in handy, because I've been running since elementary all the way up to college.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would you consider do you have any role models or anything outside of the ring or inside of boxing itself?
Oh, I like Manny Pacquiao. I like Layla Ali, Mike Tyson. I have a few. I like Gamboa.
one of Gamboa's last fights, maybe about a year or so ago. He fought on HBO. He fought a kid from Africa by the name of Rogers Mpagwa. And Rogers was a guy that I trained with a number of years ago. And I thought he had a chance in that fight. I really did because, you know, Gamboa, even though he's fast, sometimes he leaves himself open. And I was hoping Rogers would catch him at one of them dynamite right hands. But, I mean, he took my friend apart. I've never seen Rogers get beat like that. I mean, I've never seen Rogers even really get knocked down. And Gamboa had him down 4 times in 2 rounds. That guy's he's a dynamo. He's fun to watch.
Rich, that's me. I'm a dynamo too, right?
Yeah. He's a tornado. They call him.
Right. Oh, hey, Rich. Speaking of that, did you see the latest Ring magazine?
No, I didn't.
You knew who got his picture in it, right?
No.
Your co-host.
You're in the latest Ring magazine?
Yes, I am. And they call me the tornado in there, too.
Awesome.
Right.
Well,
I'm a celebrity now.
All right.
I don't know if you read Ring Magazine. I mean, before I even got in boxing, I was always a fan growing up watching it with my dad, you know, when I was just a little kid. And they do a thing in Ring Magazine now called fan photos. And you can submit pictures in there and they'll post them. And I had pictures when I fought up in Manhattan back in the late 90s. And there was a couple of world champion fighters on site that, you know, would take pictures with the guys afterwards. So I submitted some of them, got other pictures, just when I'm at fights, anybody I meet. I just take pictures of people. And I sent them about 10. They used one. Hopefully they'll be using one every month. I told all my coworkers, I brought it in to show them. I said it was the highest selling Ring magazine in one day sales. And they said, why? I said, because my picture's in there. All the girls are running out to buy it.
Now, Melissa, what do you do to prepare for a fight? What would you say is the most important thing you do to get ready?
Well, I pray. And I just keep myself, you know, just stay around positive people and just train hard and focus.
We have another caller. Hello, caller. Caller, can you hear us? Hello.
Oh.
Hello. Can you hear us? Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Hello, caller. Can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name.
Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. A friend of mine came by, another former professional fighter came by and told me that he was in awe at Melissa's training because she bench pressed 250. Is that true?
A bench press, probably a squat ever. I won't bench press that.
That's very impressive for a female fighter. A lot of guys can't do that in the gym.
I don't know when the last time I tried bench pressing, but I don't
know. Yeah, I know. I don't know the last time I tried that either, man. I always joke around like when you hit really hard, how much do you bench press? I'm like, I have good tendon strength.
Now, do you recognize that that voice of the caller there, Tony? Can you get?
No, I did.
Sounds like Keisha. Is that Keisha?
Oh.
Any other questions for our guest?
It's Michael Torres. He had stopped by yesterday. He's a junior welterweight, 13 and 2.
he has an upcoming fight, and he came by to see us here at our office. And we have a picture of Melissa of. And he said, wow, that girl is something else, you know, at that gym.
Hello? Can you hear us?
Yes.
Say that again. We lost you there for a second.
I said Michael Torres. He's a professional fighter, 13-2, a junior welterweight out of New Jersey. He stopped by our offices yesterday, and he saw a picture of Melissa, and he was like, wow, that girl is really awesome. She, you know, she's doing 250 in the gym. Most guys can't do that. So he was really impressed by it. So I thought that was really funny. But in knowing her and being around her, I was kind of impressed too, because I was like, wow, I'm going to have to ask her about that, because I want to see that myself. That's pretty amazing.
Right, so Keisha, are you denying or saying that you that's true?
Oh, no, I believe it's true. But I'm just saying, I've been around her, but he was an eyewitness, you know what I mean? So I'm just saying, it's something that I think her fans should know and the world should know, that this girl is really the real deal. She's awesome, you know? And she's in the gym displaying, you know, for instance, they don't want female fighters in the Olympics, but this girl is out there showing that she should be an Olympian, she should have been an Olympic, and that women can do what men can do in the sport of boxing. So again, you know, by him coming, Michael Torres, and saying that, he was impressed. I'm impressed. I know she did it. I never thought twice about the power of a female fighter. So it's like, I'm telling you, I know she did it.
So, Melissa, do you do a lot of weight training?
Now I don't, but when I used to run track, you know, the way they train the females, the track runners, they have us in the weight room a lot. So I don't lift as much for boxing. Like right now, I do calisthenics. You know, I do give you 100 pull-ups, push-ups, dips, whatever you want. But, I mean, the weight I could do weight because my track background, because they had, when I was training for track and stuff, that's what they would have us do. We had to bench press, do dips, you know, a lot of reps with the weight. But
right now, I'm
doing, like, calisthenics.
Yeah. Yeah, I always kind of shied away from weights because when I was boxing myself back in college, I remember that, I think it was Ferdy Pacheco or somebody that was in Muhammad Ali's camp mentioned on an interview that lifting weights can shorten the reach of a fighter, so... It kind of made sense to me because every boxing team or program I'd ever been in, you know, weights wasn't a big part of it. It was always, like you said, push-ups and sit-ups and that sort of thing, calisthenics. So it's interesting to hear, you know, people's different opinions on that.
Yeah,
what would you say is...
lifting weights... And part of the reason I did it was I'm a shorter, stockier fighter. I started keeping my weight to, you know, low weight, high rep, because I didn't want to bulk up anymore. I was having a hard enough time cutting weight down as it was without adding any extra muscle on there, you know, bulking my weight up. That was kind of the reason I kind of shied away from the weight. And I felt, you know, my arms were looser and a little bit faster when I got off of the weights. But that's me personally. You look at guys like Evander Holyfield or even Bernard Hopkins when you moved up from 160 to 175, they used a weight program that was very effective for them.
Melissa, what would you say is the thing that you enjoy most about boxing?
Oh, I enjoy winning. You know,
honest answer, I like it.
You know, after feeling after, you know, after the fight is over and the ref sprays your hand. I also enjoy being in the gym, you know, with everybody, with everybody training. And so I enjoy being around a lot of hard workers, too, as well.
All right.
Yeah, of all the people that we've asked that question to, I think you're the first to say that I enjoy winning.
I like that answer, though. That's a good answer, sir.
Yeah, that's always good to have a unique answer like that. Now, as a woman fighter, do you notice, are there any people out there who don't believe that you can fight because you are a woman, and how do you prove them wrong when you do encounter people like...
Man, this is every fight, from the amateurs to the pros, just for the little bit of fight that I had, nobody believes me. Everybody thinks I'm the retard girl. When I go to the press conference, or if I'm with my trainer, or, you know, other guys that walk with me, you know, to the weigh-ins or the press conference, they'll point at everybody else around me, like, okay, who's fighting? And then they'll point at me. They're like, oh, no, get out of here, not her. No, she should be a model or something. Is she the ring card girl? So nobody believes me until the fight, until I walk into that ring and the bell rings. Nobody believes it. Nobody believes on the fight until I step in that ring. And this is something I deal with every day. If I'm walking to the gym, oh, she's just trying to get in shape or something. Like, no, she's a fighter. And nobody believes it.
Well, I don't know if that's so much that you're a woman as you're a very good-looking woman.
Thank you.
The pictures that I've seen, I mean, you could be a ring card girl. A lot of people in the U.S. especially, I think, don't give women much credit as far as boxing goes. And actually, what I've noticed over the last few years is that the women get way more attention overseas. You know, there's women actually leading cards overseas way more often than over here in the United States. So have you actually had that opportunity to fight overseas where people kind of look on women fighting a little bit more respectfully?
I didn't get a chance yet, and, you know, I'm hoping. The only thing I had was that exhibition with Olivia Guerrera in Peru. That was it.
Yeah, it's more like Denmark and Germany and that area, I think, that they really hold the women fighters on a higher pedestal, I guess. It's interesting to see.
I haven't had the opportunity, but I look forward to it. You know, I wouldn't mind going over there and, you know, doing my thing.
All right. Now, what would you say was your best moment in the sport so far?
Winning my first WIBA title.
All right, and I heard Mike Tyson gave it to you, right?
Yes.
What was that like, meeting one of your heroes there?
Yeah, I always liked Mike Tyson. I mean, it was great because everybody was like, why you went from 4 rounds to 8 rounds? Usually, you know, you do a couple 4, you do a couple 6, you do a couple 10. I just jumped from 4, and I just did the 8, and for a belt. So, I mean, that was a great moment.
Yeah, it seems there's such a shortage of women fighters out there that happens more often with the females than the males, just because of the availability of different fighters or lack thereof. You know, there's only so many people to go around and help women fights. So, I can understand that happening in that situation. Looking forward, it's your future. Is there anybody out there that you really want to fight?
Whoever. I mean, I'm ready. I'm always ready. When I have no fights coming up, I'm still in that gym training. So I'm always in the gym. All
right. So you still on the phone here?
Yeah.
Keisha still with
us? Yes, I'm here.
Oh, did you have any other questions that you wanted to ask?
Oh, no. I just want Melissa to do her thing and to talk and to tell everybody about being the WIBA title holder and her journey through this sport of boxing. Just give her, it's her time to shine.
All Well, what was that like to finally get a title in the sport you've been working so hard at, Melissa?
I mean, it was a dream come true because I train very hard. I don't give up. You know, I had a lot of ups and downs. You know, trying to get where I'm trying to get at, and just being that, you know, they gave me the opportunity to fight for this belt and I won. I mean, I feel great. I'm still in shock, you know. But I work hard. I train hard. I don't give up. So, I mean, I feel good.
Melissa, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I'm looking at your Facebook page right now, looking at some of your boxing photos, and I see one of you there with Zab Judah. Give us a prediction on Zab's fight this weekend with Amir Khan.
It's gonna be a real interesting fight. Of course, I'm gonna go with my boy Zab. I know Zab for a while, and he's fast. He's fast and he's slick. I don't think Americano's really gonna, hit him with anything clean. You know, Zab is real slick and fast. I'm going for Zab for the fight.
All right. I gotta go with Zab. He's the hometown guy. He's here in Vegas, so definitely root for him. You know, he's a resident out here. And then Mike Tyson has been on a couple radio shows together, actually, out here that I've seen. So. But what's the New York box? Melissa.
Yes, I was doing it, and I couldn't really hear you.
Oh, yeah, we're getting a lot of static in the background for some reason. What's the New York boxing scene like?
New York boxing? Well, I can speak for the females. They're great. The boxers, the girls in New York, you know, they're great. You know, strong and willing to fight wherever, whenever. I could just speak on the female part.
do you have a lot of good training partners where you're at?
Oh yeah. Amanda Serrano, she just won the belt. Cindy Serrano, Veronica Jeffrey, Belinda La Fuente, Melissa Hernandez, Dominga, all of them. I work with all of them.
All right, awesome. Now, who do you train with? Do you have a specific trainer, or do you just kind of work with anybody in particular?
Marcellus. I work on train with Marcellus. That's my trainer in the picture with me on the Facebook.
And what's your greatest strength in the sport? If you had to pick one.
My mental, you know, I make sure that is right.
Oh, what did you say?
My mental, you know, make sure my head is right first, you know.
Oh, yeah, the discipline aspect and the mental toughness, that's a big part of boxing.
Yes.
People don't realize until they're in it, you know.
Right.
You got to be able to will yourself to do the work, to get ready for fights. You got to deal with to handle the anxiety before a fight, the adversity during the fight. So yeah, that's definitely a good thing to have solid background with the mental aspect of it. Now, is anybody outside the ring that helped you out? Growing up, that was a big role model for you?
I would say my brother.
And
whatever I did, you know, he supported me. Like, you know, he was there for my first amateur fight, you know, my track meets and stuff. So, you know, just a good supporter. And it's always good to have somebody that supports you, you know, along the way.
Awesome. And what are your interests outside of boxing? What do you do for fun and all that?
I like to help. I like to help, you know, help other people and, you know, give them inspiration and stuff. And I guess, you know, give food away, clothes, you know. I like to do that.
So you're a community
service. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. And do you visit a lot of schools and stuff like that?
No, I haven't been to any schools, but I talked to some girls. I've been to like shelters and stuff.
Oh, okay. I bet you there'd be a lot of homeless women out there that would make good boxers.
Yeah, they would, and I'm willing to help. You know, they want. You know, I have a lot of women that come up to me and ask me, you know, what me get into boxing. And they'll tell me that they want to box too. So, you know, I talk to them and you know I tell them, you know, come out of the gym and you know and get them started. You know, see if they really want to do it. See where their head is at, so we can definitely use some more females.
Yeah, no matter where they come from, I guess. That's definitely interesting. Now, is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to or say hello to out there?
I want to give a shout-out to everybody who's listening. Hey.
Anybody you want to thank or any final thoughts or anything like that?
I want to thank my coach, Marcellus, for, you know, having patience with me because I know sometimes that could be a pain. Thank you. And thank you, Hassan and everybody who helped me get ready for the fight. You know, shout out to Kwong Gym in Detroit, K9 for helping me get ready, and everybody else. Thank you.
Thank you. And definitely we'll keep an eye on you and follow your progress. And it's been great chatting with you. And
you.
As far as your fight goes, whoever you fight, I think they're going to have their hands full. And I'd say good luck, but I don't think you're going to need it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
Okay,
thank you, good night.
There you have it. That's Melissa Saintville. She's a female professional boxer. Has a record of, I believe, 2-1-2, five fights. And it's very impressive overall as a fighter and a human being. Sounds like she's very well grounded, and it was a great interview.
Yeah, so I'm very sweet girl. And you know what, Leah? Tough as nails. Tough as absolute nails. I had the pleasure of watching her in her pro debut in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. And, I mean, she gave up about 7 or 8 pounds in weight, and I think it was about a good 6 inches in height. And not just to mention that, she was fighting the girl that was a local sensation. So there was a lot of hype going into that, too. And, I mean, it was amazing. These two, I mean, absolutely model-esque-looking girls. I mean, model-esque-looking girls. Fighting like the Dickens. Fighting like a female Gaudian Ward, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, she definitely is a pretty good looking woman. Like I told her myself. Yeah. It doesn't surprise me that she was confused as the ring girl and card girl.
That was good.
And that was another interesting tie in there that she was a model for the Box Shield girls. That was a real blast in the past. That was probably like maybe my 6th or 7th story overall for the entire Fighting is Unlimited, you know, history, I think, was that Box Shield girls artist when I interviewed him. And I think I'm pretty sure it's still on the MySpace page blog.
Yeah,
from way back when in the archives. And BoxyGirls.com isn't even around anymore. The site's gone, so I don't even know what happened. But the pictures are still out there. If you search for her name, the pictures will still pop up. They did of her. So it's kind of interesting. But that whole series, I mean, they really went to great lengths to accentuate the female form, if you know what I mean, in their pictures. So that's something that they took seriously. So she was perfect, I think, for that. But let's see. We definitely appreciated the hookup there from Keisha for that interview. If anybody out there listening wants to chat boxing, MMA, wrestling, anything like that with us, you can give us a ring and join us. The call-in number is 347-324-3228. I think we had a couple of big fans of hers there, including Keisha herself. Keisha Morrissey, thanks again. That was cool to get people to actually ask questions for the first time ever on our show from the peanut gallery, so to speak, I guess. So it's great stuff. But let's check out the boxing and MMA schedule for the week before we conclude the show. Are we still with us, Tony?
I'm still with you, man. I've been here.
The phone was sort of silent there.
No.
That's because all the callers dropped off finally. We have clear air. Big Zab Judah fight. She says Zab's going to... Makes me wonder whether I should go run down to the sports book, place a bet.
You know what? I would not be shocked if Zab won in impressive fashion. Zab is a guy that, you know, I mean, he's had his hardships, but you look at it like this. You know, he was a guy for four rounds was kicking the crap out of Floyd Mayweather. He's got fast hands. He had Miguel Cotto hurt a few times, and it took Cotto nine rounds to break through and break him down and then finally stop him. So you got a guy like Zab. I mean, obviously he's got a vulnerable chin, and sometimes he has some maturity issues in there when things aren't going exactly his way. But other than that, we're talking about a talented fighter. We're talking about a fighter with fast hands, even at 33 years old. He's got fast hands, he's a southpaw, and he's very sharp. I mean, he could theoretically use that speed, get on angles, catch Khan coming in, and, you know, like laser sharp, you know, just cut him to ribbons. And Khan, as we know, does not have a sturdy chin at all. Zab could win it in the fifth round. Zab could win it in the 12th round. And same thing with Khan. It's a fight that's going to be a good fight to watch because it's a fight you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you can get a fight, say you're in a fight. For example, a fight from 6 years ago. Arturo Gatti and Floyd Mayweather. All the money was going on Mayweather and some of the Gatti loyalists, and I considered myself one, was sort of saying, man, Gotti's got to get in there and he's got to rough him up early and get Floyd off his game. The longer it goes and Gatti is not, you know, making him uncomfortable, and Gatti tried to box with him, and next thing you know, Floyd cutting the living crap out of him. He's destroying him. That is something, you know, you knew it was going to happen. It was kind of inevitable unless Gatti, you know, fought a caveman type fight and, you know, just made it down, made it dirty, which he didn't do. But, yeah, you have a fight coming up here. And I honestly, I can give you two on this fight. I can give you one where Judah knocks Khan out. I can give you another one where Khan knocks Judah out. And it's almost like a coin flip. That's what's exciting about it.
All right. Well, we definitely will see. Sort of off topic, but I just saw on the news a little while ago that the it looks like the NFL is over or about to be over shortly here. Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
Gonna see the I think it's week 12 of the season. We got the Patriots versus the Eagles. You ready for that? Philadelphia.
Oh, nice. Okay. Maybe I'll go.
So they're coming. Yeah, if you want to see the Eagles lose, then you go to that game.
Not if I bring Vinny.
Oh.
Why Vinny tailgate?
Well, I'm getting to the boxing schedule for this week. We have interesting fights on ESPN2 leading the card. Super middleweights Anthony Durrell, 22-0, 19 knockouts, fighting Kevin Engel, 18-4, 15 knockouts. And we have a welterweight co-main event there of Joseph Alegale, who's 12-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Leonard Lane, 12-1 with 7 knockouts. So that's on tomorrow night from Cabazon, California. Never heard of it, but that's where the fight is. Let's see what else we got. We got another fight from Hollywood Park Casino in Inglewood, California, and it's all 4-rounders for some reason. But we have a couple interesting fights there, well, at least one anyway. Main event of Danny Perez at light heavyweight. He's 34-8 with 17 knockouts, fighting Benjamin Diaz, who's 10-4 with 2 draws and 7 knockouts. Wondering why that's a 4-rounder, though. That's kind of weird. They're all 4-rounders. Maybe they have a rule there in that town. And we spoke earlier about Chrissy Martin. Now we have super bantamweight Christopher Martin fighting in Tucson, Arizona on Friday. He's 22-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting Jose Silveira, who's 12-3 with 4 knockouts. So what else we got? We got the vacant Mexico flyweight title on the line on Saturday from Jose Cuervo Salón in Polanco, Distrito Federal, Mexico. Edgar Jimenez, 12-5 with 9 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Eric Ortiz. It's 32-11, 21 knockouts, 3 draws. And then over in Sonora, Mexico, on the same day, it's going to be on United States Fox TV and Fox Español. We have Orlando Salido, 35-11 with 23 knockouts, fighting Kenichi Yamaguchi, 17-1 with 2 knockouts. That's for the WBO featherweight title. On that card between Alejandro Valdez, 25-19 knockouts, 2 draws, fighting Enrique Bernache, who's 17-2.
Leo is coming off a win against Juan Manuel Lopez, who was 30-0 in his first loss of his career. And before that, he actually had his own loss to Briarcus Gamboa.
Oh,
yeah, it's pretty intense. See what else we got. The IBF Latino featherweight title is going up for grabs there down in Jalisco, Mexico. Jackson has 22-14 knockouts, and Eduardo Escobedo 31-3 with 22 knockouts. We'll be fighting for that belt on Saturday. And a fight that we've been actually putting up a lot of blog posts about. We have a main event over in London going on at the Wembley Arena. Derek Cora, 14-0, 9 knockouts. And Tyson Fury, also 14-0, but with 10 knockouts. And these guys actually have such a blood feud, I guess you could call it, going on that they've had to ask for extra security at the weigh-in. And word has it that they've actually canceled the face-off that you traditionally have at such a weigh-in because they're afraid that these guys are actually going to start the fight early. There's another few fights on this card, too. We got Ashley Theophane, who's 29-4 with 7 knockouts, 1 draw at light welterweight. He's going to be facing Jason Cook, who's 28-3 with 14 knockouts, 1 draw. And we also have Theophane is 29-4 with 7 knockouts.
Somebody knocked him the hell out, and I can't remember who.
Well, 7 people. No. I shouldn't say that.
Theophane
doesn't have any knockout losses, according to this.
No, maybe I'm thinking of somebody else then. I'm getting old. My Rain Man powers are leaving me.
Uh-oh. The real Rain Man. But, yeah, they have 4 losses, and then they have the little red parentheses, and there's a 0 in there, so that usually means no knockout losses. But anyway, we also have a light middleweight fight on that card between Ryan Toms, who's 8-0 undefeated with 3 knockouts. He's fighting Pat McAleese. He's 12-1, 1 draw, 2 knockouts. And he actually is nicknamed Fat Pat, believe it or not. But it's with a PH. PhD. No. PhAT. Let's see. We got another fight in the United Kingdom on Saturday, put on by Ricky Hatton Promotions. And the main event is for the WBA Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title. It's Scott Quigg, who's 21-0 with 14 knockouts, fighting Franklin Varela, 19-5 with 10 knockouts. And we may well have the mismatch of the week on this card as well, as a co-main event, believe it or not. They got Sergey Rabchenko, who's 17-0 with 12 knockouts, fighting Kevin McCauley, who's 9-26 with 3 draws. And none of his wins have been recent. Let's see. We got a fight in the Bronx, New York, also this Saturday, put on by Joe DiGuardia at Hunts Point Produce Market. What? That doesn't sound right. Yeah, we're gonna have a fight in the frozen food section. that's an interesting venue, the Hunts Point Produce Market. I'll have to look that up. But we got the main event is undefeated Joe Hank, 16-0 with 11 knockouts, fighting Alfredo Escalera Jr., 18-3 with 12 knockouts for the vacant International Boxing Association heavyweight title. And we have a female fight on the undercard there. Alicia Ashley, 16-9 with one knockout, one draw, fighting Christina Ruiz, who's 6-3-1 with four knockout wins. And as we mentioned earlier, Amir Khan versus Zab Judah out here in Vegas at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. That fights for the WBA Super World Light Welterweight title and the IBF Light Welterweight title. Khan is 25-1 with 17 knockouts, and Judah is 41-6 with 28 knockouts. Also on that card, we have Peter Quillen versus Jason Lhuillier. Lhuillier is 21-5 with 8 knockouts and 1 draw. And also we have James Kirkland versus Alexis Haloros. Kirkland is 28-1 with 25 knockouts, and Haloros is 15-3 with 11 knockouts and 2 draws. And actually, it looks like Zab Judah's brother or cousin is also on that card. We got Josiah Judah. They must be related. That's a super middleweight, a 6-rounder in the undercard there. And he's 9-1-1 with 2 knockouts. And he's fighting Rafael Dostrebski, who's 4-6-1 with 1 knockout. But I've actually seen this guy in my old hometown there of Dorchester, Mass. He fought a guy who I knew personally and had been an MMA fighter. Career, and a guy named Dan Conway back in 2009. It was his pro debut as a boxer, and he got knocked out in the second round because he pretty much put it all on the line in the first round and tried for the knockout. It didn't quite work. But Dostrebski's record is very deceiving. Since that fight, he's gone on to win 3 in a row. And at the time, he had lost most of his fights. I think he was 0-6-1 that first time when they fought. So all of his losses were before that fight. He came in and won. But he's had 1 split decision and 2 unanimous decision wins since then. So Zab Judah's brother might be in trouble.
Yeah, he's never been on Zab's caliber.
And Zab's got a pretty good chance here looking at his record. He actually has thrown together a few impressive wins. He actually beat an undefeated fighter his last fight in 2010, Lucas Martin Matisse, 27-0. He won by a split decision in that fight. And his last fight, he won the IBF light welterweight title by beating Kaiser Mabuza, 23-6-3 by TKO in the 7th round. So it's definitely going to be an interesting fight, I think. We'll keep an eye out on it. We got a pretty big fight out in Atlantic City this weekend, too. There's no undercard listed here, but the main event is Ron Nakash, 25-1, 18 knockouts at cruiserweight, and his opponent's going to be Lou Del Val.
Be a good fight. Nakash is a high up-and-coming fighter. He trains fighters to be commanders in the Israeli army. Definitely a tough, tough kid. Got some talent. Lost his last fight in Tulsa.
Yeah, he's fighting Lou Del Val, who is 36-6 with 22 knockouts. I'm pretty sure he's a guy from New England area. His record here, Long Island, New York. Boy, I was wrong there.
Honey Boy. Majority draw, 10-round fight. Before that, he lost to De Leon Tinsley, 8-3-1. And his last win was against Newton Kidd, who is 6-6-1.
I can't fight Newton Kidd.
He's had some tough fights over the last five or so fights there. He had a four-fight win streak broken back in October of 2006 by Zach Page. It seems like every time he fights somebody with a really lopsided record, he doesn't do too well. He fought Roy Jones Jr. back in 1998. Lost by unanimous decision.
Mine, the first guy to knock Jones down, though.
Really?
Yeah. Still the first knock on anything. Nothing like Jones had suffered later in his career. He's good. Let's go to knock Jones down.
Also fought Virgil Hill back in 1996. Lost. And Virgil was 41-1. That was for the WBA World Light Heavyweight title. And other than that fight, I think we only have a couple more for next week. Springfield, Missouri, on Saturday, is hosting DJ Flores, 24-1 with 15 knockouts, fighting Nicholas Iannuzzi, who's 16-2 with 9 knockouts. And that's for the vacant NABA USA Cruiserweight title. That's the last major fight of the week. Everything else Sunday, not worth mentioning really. As far as mixed martial arts goes, let's check out what we got coming up there. We have a pretty big weekend here. Tonight we have a couple fights going on. Combat USA and Ironman Championship. Combat USA is from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So the Wisconsin versus Illinois Championship there. Ironman Championship 10 is from Salinópolis, Pará, Brazil. And then tomorrow night we have a Challengers fight. Challenger 17 from Palms Casino Resort in Las Vegas here. If I were on friendlier terms with the UFC and Strikeforce, I'd probably be going to this. But anyway, we have Bobby Volker versus Roger Bowling, Sarah Kaufman versus Liz Carmouche, Covince St. Preux versus Jason Casson, LeVar versus Devin Cole, Adlin Magov versus Ronald Stallings, TJ Cook versus Lionel Lanham, Ben Lagman versus Anthony Smith, and Bill Cooper versus Maka Watson. Also this weekend, Saturday, we have Belize Fight Night 2 from Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. We got Relentless, URC 26 from Grand Sierra Resort in Reno, Nevada. Beat Down at Four Bears 9, the Four Bears Casino and Lodge in Newtown, North Dakota. And then on Sunday, we have King of the Cage Shockwave Gold from the Gold Country Casino in Oroville, California. We have the Pancrase Impressive Tour 6 in Shinjuku Face, Tokyo, Japan. We have CC10, Roddy versus Davis from Dublin, Ireland. Bellator Fighting Championship 47 from Casino Rama in Rama, Ontario, Canada. We have Larson versus Davila, DC-188 at the Target Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we have CCF-6 Bushido from the Eagle River Casino in Whitecourt, Alberta, Canada. And from Rio de Janeiro, we have Watch Out Combat Show 14 on Sunday. Another fight in Brazil, Sierra Fighters Championship 2. Then going back to Dorchester, the same place where I was talking about seeing Dan Conway in his pro debut, the Dorchester Armory. We have our old friends, Cage Fighting Extreme, doing their 17th show there called Beantown Brawl 2, Dorchester Armory in Dorchester, Mass., which is a little suburb of Boston. And then in Portsmouth, Hampshire, England, we have Shock and Awe 8, All Powers Combat 5 from Payson, Arizona on Sunday. Seems like every fight's on Sunday this weekend for some reason. Pink Eye. CCF-10 Pink Eye from Atlantic City, New Jersey. I don't know where they came up with that name. CFA-2 McCorkle versus Hayes from U.S. Century Bank Arena in Miami, Florida. King of the Cage Compression Test from Lac-Doux, Flambeau, Wisconsin. V3 Fights, Vaney Vidi Vici from Memphis, Tennessee. Battle on the Bay in Richmond, California, put on by Octagon MMA. Fight to Win Invaders is going on from Denver, Colorado. We got Sport Fight 10 in Atlanta, Georgia. AFA 7 Supremacy from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Arnold's Amateur MMA Festival is going on in Columbus, Ohio. Toll Fight Challenge 21 from Willow Springs, Illinois. Annihilation Productions Crossroads of Redemption from Lawrenceburg, Indiana. Rapture MMA Barroom Brawl from Lafayette, Indiana. Extreme Knockout 11 XKO from Arlington, Texas. MFL Indiana versus Michigan 3 from South Bend, Indiana. Cage Wars 9 from Grand Junction, Colorado. Cage Time MMA, Cage Time 4 from Hamburg, Pennsylvania.
Yep, I know that's about an hour from my house.
Is that where the hamburger was invented?
Very well may have been, you know.
I know it's in Connecticut from my experience watching the Man vs. Food show. But how far is that from you, Hamburg?
Hamburg is about maybe an hour and 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
It's not really that far from Allentown, which is it's a little past that, up a little further. Yeah, about an hour and 10 minutes. Because we go up there sometimes. There's Cabela's sports gear. We go there. So, yeah, not really all that far.
Well, we got a few more MMA fights here. We got Hard Rock MMA 38 from Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, Sunday. And War on the Shore 5 from Geneva, Ohio, put on by NAAFS. Freestyle Cage Fighting 48 from Shawnee, Oklahoma. That's the last event on Sunday. Then we have a couple on Monday. Road FC3 Explosion from the Convention Center in Seoul, South Korea. Then we have the Uprising by CFS from San Diego, California. That's it till next week. And, of course, we have UFC 133. We'll be talking about probably next week, maybe the week after. It's a pretty big fight. We'll discuss the
the fights from this weekend once we get to next week, of course. Chat about the Strikeforce Challengers goes. And, of course, the big Zab Judah fight. Wanted to talk to Melissa. That was it. But we got about only 5 minutes left anyway, so. Till next week, I think that's going to be it for us. Unless you have anything.
All right. Now, don't forget to take that video I sent you and post it on the site.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're gonna post a little video of Tony the Tornado in action. So look out for that.
And also don't forget to get your latest. In fact, all the listeners out there, get the latest copy of Ring Magazine, where it has me in there listed as Tony the Tornado.
All right.
Yeah, they did that fan photo thing. It's me and Harry Yorgi in there. But I sent them a ton of photos, so hopefully we'll have one a month. And I brought it into work today, too. My boss was like, how much did you pay them to write, call you Tony the Tornado? Like, you have to. He's like, I'm going to go through your checking account and look at all your credit card statements to see if you paid them to call you Tony the Tornado. I'm like, I told you, I didn't have to. Well, you know, we had a good banter over it. You know, pretty fun. All right, Marcy's, well, till next week, the tornado's out.
All right, folks. Thanks for stopping by. And tune in next week. We'll have another guest for you and another 2 hours of combat sports craziness.
Later.
Bye-bye.